Coming up next is the Professor James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening, September 14th, 2006. There is so much material to cover tonight, I'm going to dispense with any what one might call commercialization or conversation about 800 numbers, etc., and go right away to the topics that I have to cover tonight. First of all, a few what some people may call political comments, and I know there's people out there who kind of criticize me for putting these in here, but it's leading into a topic that is extremely important, and that is what I call the portal to the dark side, or the portal to the dark world. And this was a kind of a reality wake-up call for me this past week, as I encountered a person I've known for a long time, a person that I've had both business and personal conversations with over past years, but this person had never really delved into my website, and I did not know this, but the person was a very avid Republican, religious person, and very much a George Bush kind of worshiper. And so when he read what is on my page, this is what I call the portal to the dark world. And this is when people see this for the first time, which was the case with this person, there's a sort of a shock that occurs. And I want to talk a little bit about that later on, because it's so important in understanding the level of misinformation that is communicated to the public and the high intelligence level of many people who have been totally sucked in and hoodwinked by this information blitz, misinformation campaign so successfully portrayed to the public these days. But first, a couple quick comments. The world is calling for the U.S. to cease the war on terror, as it is only increasing radicalization of groups throughout the world. With, of course, a couple days ago, the attempt to blow up the U.S. embassy in Damascus. And with Syria and many other countries, of course, talking to a deaf ear when they attempt to state this. But remember that the point of what is going on, the Prince of Terror, as one would start to call him, this is actually a biblical term, the point is to drum up fear, terror, world chaos. And most appropriately, I posted on my webpage on September 11th the request that everybody watch the movie V for Vendetta. And I didn't know much about this movie myself until the movie itself, until a friend of mine started talking about it. And then this is a person who listens to a tremendous amount of radio, knows everybody, what everybody's doing in the alternative radio industry, and noted that this topic did come up on a radio show or two, and was immediately dropped in mid-sentence. So that's why I picked it up and found a very important message. So required viewing for all of my listeners. Get the movie, the DVD, V for Vendetta, and watch it. And I think you're going to find that the scriptwriter, the screenplay, and the producer made a very important statement. And it's a statement that, well, let's put it this way. The people sitting in the very vulnerable New World Order groups do not want you to watch. And remember, their purpose is to create terror for control. So I do recommend highly get the movie V for Vendetta and watch it two or three times. I think you'll get the idea. This past week, Johns Hopkins University medical study concluded that there was no such thing as Gulf War syndrome relating to the first Gulf War, George H. Bush, the senior, and who orchestrated that incredible hypothetical war against Saddam, who they created. Remember that the United States, the CIA, created Saddam Hussein. I'm not going to go into the history of that. If you don't know about these things, I suggest you educate yourself. The Johns Hopkins study minimizing the symptoms, saying that it was just nervousness, other things that are very mild, almost like a headache. They're confusing the issue, stating that there, since there are multiple syndromes and symptoms, that there's no cause or solid medical conclusion that they could come to. And this is why the VA now is using this excuse to abandon our troops from the first Gulf War. Now, I just want to compare this to, for example, a heart attack. A heart attack, depending on the victim of the heart attack or the patient, can come in many forms. It could be a pain in the lower left arm. It could be a pain in the upper side. It could be ongoing headaches for days and days. Or some people even have lower back pains, other types of symptoms. And so how can the VA say that because the symptoms are not consistent amongst all of the victims of Gulf War syndrome, that in fact it is not a medically identifiable problem, and therefore the U.S. government has no responsibility to take care of these poor people who attempted to serve their country, obviously being abandoned. The Professor Jones Brigham Young University facade keeps generating. Amazingly, the U.S. State Department claims it has a 10,000-page rebuttal to the paper and concepts presented by Professor Jones that the World Trade Center top floor fell at a near freefall acceleration and velocity, and therefore proving that the buildings were demolished. So it is entirely bizarre that the State Department would claim to have produced a 10,000-page rebuttal. What is their main interest in this? 10,000 pages, did they expect that it is so long that and ridiculously, obscenely heavy that no one would possibly read this or be able to refute their statement? The implication being that Professor Jones, the physicist from Brigham Young University, has somehow been rebutted or refuted, or that this is somehow peer review. None of this is true at all. This also implies that there are seriously large numbers of people on the side of keeping this story snuffed out, away from the public and out of public view. So the question, and I talked about this on my webpage, that the one of the main quips that you see on blogs or on the internet or in the newspapers, etc., anytime they want to rebut the so-called conspiracy theorists, and by the way, conspiracy theorist is a term dreamed up in the 1970s by think tanks to put a label on anybody who does not agree with the official government story. And I have a posting on the very front of my homepage regarding that, because, of course, in my career, I have been labeled as a conspiracy theorist regarding Planet X or all kinds of other topics that I talk about, weather control, you name it. And so I have a specific posting that conspiracy theory is a title, it's a label to be placed on anybody that does not agree with the official government sanctioned story of how certain things work. So once again, Professor Jones being labeled and removed from his teaching position. The other point, why was a professor who's been teaching physics for 20 years successfully in a university, who's had no problem or complaints with his teaching record, removed from teaching classes? And as I posted on my webpage, this reminds me distinctly of when I was at Cornell University. I continued to teach my physics courses, but had a person there from the physics department, a Dr. Robinson, who tailed me at all times, was within, probably 10 feet at most of me at all times while I was on the job, so to speak, at Cornell University, to make sure that I did not talk to students about my theoretical work regarding the fact that comets are not dirty snowballs, that the solar system is electrically active, etc. And the same thing now with Professor Jones being removed from contact with students when there was no indication or no complaints of any kind prior to him saying something about the 911 event that there was a problem with his teaching or communication with students on the topic that he taught at the university, which was physics, classroom physics. So you find that for example, the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, there's a writer who talks about and belittles this professor. I checked into this woman's background. She has no science background, yet she is criticizing a physics professor based and simply calling and writing him off as some kind of a nutcase. And this is what's happening. The information blackout, the information smear that's going on today is ongoing, and the polarization that's going on in the world is extreme, based on the drummed up non-reality of terrorism. And that's why I feel it's so important that people watch the movie V for Vendetta. Just a quick note, this is on a comical level, Pluto demotion draws protest. This out of the CNN article reprinted from Space and Science. Now, Las Cruces, New Mexico, the son of the late Klein Tombaugh, who discovered Pluto, and a group of protesters, I love these signs, protectionism or protest for Pluto, size doesn't matter. Look at these signs protesting the fact that Pluto, and this was almost done in jest, this protest, but still indicating that for 50 years, Pluto was a planet, and now all of a sudden it isn't. And this is not setting well with the public. So I really applaud the public for waking up and realizing what ludicrous garbage professional astronomers are trying to pawn off. And as with many things, this is just the tip of the iceberg. I think people are finally waking up that everything from the Big Bang to comets or the dirty snowball comet model to Pluto not being a planet, I think the public is really waking up. And there's a tremendous awakening going on in the world today, in spite of the fact that the newspapers, the media, every radio station that you turn on that is funded by advertisements. I am appalled to find that radio stations that I had some respect for in the past would put up guests only to ridicule them or to bring in canned end-of-show pre-recorded messages to downplay every guest that they had on the show that night. I'm sorry, I just cannot support shows that really are bringing out guests only to ridicule them or to bring them down with the official government stories, the official government sanctioned stories. And this is in the case of science, this is in the case of 911, and on and on. Just a quick note, and I am a pacifist myself. I am a believe in nonviolence. I believe that the world is a far worse place because of the orchestrated 9/11 events, obviously orchestrated by people in the CIA, and we know who controls that agency, the police force of the World Bank, International Monetary Fund. And now in Baghdad, the death toll ranging from 1,500 to 3,000 people per month. The morgues in Baghdad have grown from 15 shooting victims per month in 2002 when the U.S. forces entered Iraq. This was under Saddam, and the Rockefellers even saying that entering Iraq was a total mistake. Up now to 1,500 to 3,000 shooting deaths per month. That does not include deaths by other reasons, sickness, disease, etc. But the two new morgues being built in Baghdad alone, and of course those numbers do not include the outside regions of Iraq, but two new morgues being built in Baghdad, one of them proposed to accommodate 250 corpses per day. Now, apparently somebody has some big plans for that region. Depopulation, you might call it. Quick note on European spacecraft hitting the moon. And of course, many telescopes trained on that spacecraft as it crashed into the moon, sending up a plume of dust, which could be viewed, of course, from Earth. Now, I recall when dealing with NASA many years ago, oh, at least 10 years ago or more, and then over this past decade, that NASA said that they could not focus on the moon with any of their large telescopes because, first of all, the moon was too bright. That would ruin the optics and the cameras on the telescope. Well, obviously, that fell by the wayside when some young astronomer took a picture of the full moon with the Hubble Space Telescope and put it on the Internet. Almost laughable. And so then they said, well, the big telescopes can't track anything on the moon because the tracking mechanisms in the telescopes were set up for celestial objects, not the moon. Then when that turned out to be a lie, then they said, well, the moon is too close. We can't focus on the moon with these big telescopes because it's too close. All of these reasons being given for not attempting to take photographic images and proving that they, in fact, went to the moon with the Apollo space program. But this is so interesting. European spacecraft crashes into the moon September 5th, and every big telescope on the planet is aimed at the moon to watch the spacecraft hit the moon. Gee, what's wrong with that picture? A quick comment on nanotechnology, small stuff, big concerns, an article out of Popular Science. And the entire problem here is that, once again, industry far outstrips any rational controls. The interest, of course, being first to market, first to profit, and the safety of workers, of people working with this technology in packaging, in development, and in the public production of this, these nanotechnologies, typically fine powders, extremely, extremely fine powders. They go in suntan lotions, sun-blocking lotions. There's evidence that people have been absorbing this fine powder through sun-blocking sunscreens, etc. Many technologies, many products coming on the market that use nanotechnology. Also, nanotechnology being used for miniaturization of chips that can be put in a shot where you can go and get a shot, or your kids can go get a shot, or whatever. And in fact, in that shot of so-called serum or a medical shot for whatever reason, preventive medicine, etc., would be a chip they are talking about putting chips in every animal, every chicken, every farm animal would have a chip in it. So when that chicken is processed and eaten, in fact, that chip would then move into the human recipient. Very bizarre things going on in this world today. Now on to the next topic, and by the way, the science topic I will be talking about at the end of the show is a rather esoteric little topic dealing with galaxies, colliding galaxies, and the question is, if two galaxies collided, in other words, they moved together, what would be the major reaction? I mean, would stars be colliding and crashing all over the place, or exactly what would happen? And I think you're going to be very surprised as to what exactly would happen. And this has been known, of course, for a long time, but I want to relay it to my audience. But first of all, the topic of, as I talked about before, the portal to the dark world. And this came from an experience this past week. Then I talked to some other friends that knew both this person and myself. And some people actually made a recommendation that on my homepage, I actually put a portal link explaining for people who have never been exposed to the dark world that we know exists out there. Now, most of the people who are experienced listeners to my show or to other shortwave shows or alternative radio are fully aware of this, but imagine a person who lives in Middle America, raising a family, goes to church every Sunday, believes that terrorists attacked the two towers and 19 hijacked planes, that Dick Cheney is an honest man, that George Bush is a God-fearing, honorable man. Imagine somebody of that mentality going to my webpage for the first time and reading it. And this is what you might call reality flash, or what I call entering the portal to the dark side for the first time. They've never imagined someone who's been so cloistered and protected by the news media in their little middle-class life that they have never seen or witnessed any of this information before. And for a lot of you out there, I know this is going to be difficult because you are so attuned to what's going on in the world today. You're very up on this. You know how to read misinformation. But it's very important to put your mind in somebody else's who has never experienced this before. And so the one recommendation of a good friend of mine was to actually create a portal on my webpage and gather all the information regarding the CIA and the Bushes and the Black Ops and their cocaine program back in the MENA, Arkansas days, and the ongoing trade of heroin out of Afghanistan, or the oil industries, or Halliburton. All of these. Now imagine someone who views America as a pristine place where there can be no wrong, where the leaders only do good, where there's no misinformation, the newspaper always presents the correct information, the nightly news is the best source of information. Imagine yourself encountering a person like this, which I did this past week, not knowing that I had known this person for a very long period of time, never knowing that this person worshipped the Bushes, had gone to political campaigns, and been in the same room with the Bushes, and was a Bush admirer, adorer, essentially. So put yourself in that person's position, and then imagine that you go to my homepage for the first time and start reading about the corruption in government, the black ops experiments with viral experimentation on kidnapped human beings, on and on and on. Imagine that person's shock at reading this, violating everything they ever thought was true. Now, the first reaction, of course, is one of anger, one of that I am creating some kind of a mythological or politically motivated set of lies to try and destroy people. Believe me, let me explain something very clearly. By putting this kind of material on my webpage, I am, number one, being diverted from my science message, and number two, losing a lot of listeners. And the reason I have to put this up, the reason that it is important for the public, my listening audience, to hear this, is because without this kind of information, you will never understand the political situation with science today. You will never understand that NASA is a completely manipulated front agency with black ops space science going on in the background. You will never understand why the NASA continues to pound the Dirty Snowball Comet model, because the Tier 2 scientists are in this subjugated position where they think they're publishing current material. This is all they've ever known. They're in a compartmentalized scientific community where everybody else talks to them in this terminology and this matter and about these topics. And they don't realize that there's a whole level of science above them. They don't realize that the monetary system that they're being fed is totally phony, on and on and on. So when someone comes into this for the first time, or I believe I would actually be remiss in my duty as a citizen, as a scientist, and as an educator if I did not give people the full spectrum of my experience and of what I know about. And by the way, this is important for kids to learn too. This is not something that parents should stuff cotton in their kids' ears and keep them away because it is too adult or whatever. I am a firm believer that kids are adults in little people's bodies, and that they are very tuned, they're very mature, and if you treat them like adults, they will grow up to be adults. If you treat them like kids, I just saw a sign coming home this evening, and it said something like, "How to understand your teenager's mind." And I'm thinking, well, the only way to understand a teenager's mind is they are adults. They don't have as much experience as we do, but in a lot of ways, they have a much better perspective on the world than we do as adults, as so-called adults. So my belief with kids, and I've always believed this when I was in education, when I was in a classroom, or when I'm on this radio show, I tell it like it is. And it's up to you, it's up to the person, or in a classroom, it's up to the student to take that information and digest it. Put it into their life and put it into their perspective. And my job is to tell them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. If you hold back, you are not doing your job as an educator. And that's why in the universities where they're pulling these professors who have something definite to say about 911, they're not politically motivated, they've always been good, honest people, and they're saying something, it just doesn't happen to be politically correct, if you see what I'm saying. So back to dealing with a person who is walking through that portal, that window, the window to the dark side of reality for the very first time, except they're not a child, they're not a teenager, they're not a young adult. They're 50 years old. And everything they thought was true, all of a sudden they're reading something that flies in the face of that. They come out, the first reaction is one of anger, one where they get very verbal and accuse the person of having all kinds of ulterior motives for presenting that information. And I might remind you that I don't buy into any of the political parties. So when I talk about the Bushes, I'm also talking about the Clintons, the Bush-Clinton White House. The control of the White House for decades, as George Bush Sr. sat behind the Reagan administration and other administrations head of the CIA early in his career. How did that happen? As he was in the Southeast Asia during the Vietnam era, etc. Yeah, these people have been around for a long time, running a lot of very black ops, black behind-the-scenes operations. And they believe that you are simply cannon fodder. Your job is to sit out there and take whatever they dish out, and they are the rulers, the blue bloods, the people who just should control what's going on. They don't consider anything else. And so for a person, as I said, to come into contact with my homepage for the first time and read it, it is an assault on everything they knew, everything they believed, and every value that they have ever held dear to their heart. This new view of the world is a very scary place for people who have never seen it before. It is a very strange place for me to be as an educator, a person who spent countless hours in the classroom at the university level teaching students about science. It becomes somewhat strange to be a scientist in the public eye in a very politically polarized world. And we've seen this before in the past, and I personally believe it is eminently important for scientists to speak out because they have a tremendous amount of training and analysis, and there's a scientific method, if they are good scientists, to give information that is logical, that can be presented. Now, I'm very appalled by people who claim to be scientists but are totally purchased and paid for producing the company party line of the government, or the so-called government, which is literally a front agency for the New World Order. I also want to make something very specific, especially to people who are somewhat new to the radio show or to my work. What I talk about on this radio show, when I talk about the Bushes and the Clintons and the CIA and Iran-Contra and their drug dealings back in the 80s, which are ongoing today, it's because through my experiences, through my, for example, efforts in, just an example, in California trying to get funding, meeting people who were young kids of the New World Order people moving finances, and my extrasensory perception at reading who these people were and then delving into the reality of how these people got in their positions. Also, being in contact with people in the aerospace industry who were staunch Republicans, who knew intimately well what was going on with Iran-Contra, and the fact that much of the conversation regarding the MENA, Arkansas drug dealings, this was common knowledge in California amongst high-level businessmen back in the 80s. So when I talk about these things, it's not because I read it on somebody's web page or saw it in a book or a magazine article. It's because I'm telling you because I saw it. I heard the people's plans, the airplanes that they took out of MENA, or they took out of L.A. airport, flew out over the Pacific and varied the flight plans to take arms down into Central America, trading for drugs through Emmanuel Noriega and his people there from Colombia. I have been on the inside of these groups, these very wealthy people, to the point where I've seen and know that that's what went on there. I don't have to read a book. I know why Ronald Reagan said 157 times that he didn't remember, because he was being told by Bush that he better not remember. So at any rate, we all know who controlled the White House back then. and who controls it now. And that Bill Clinton was in on that deal, and that anybody who was familiar with the MENA, Arkansas gig of these people know that that's where they earned a lot of their money to fund their political efforts and a lot of other activities. Let's put it that way, that the CIA during Iran-Contra had flotillas, navies, private bank accounts around the world, running completely autonomous of the U.S. government, which everybody thinks they're somehow the international police or investigatory branch of the United States government. Nothing could be farther than the truth. So when I talk about these things, it's because I've been around the block, I've seen these people from the inside, and I know this because I saw it myself, I heard it myself, and I'm not, like I say, I didn't read it in a book or a magazine article or something like that. So I want to be very specific. So when people that have never been off of their block, that have, and these are good people, these are good American, honest American citizens, so let me not make any mistake that these people, I think they're tremendously amazing people, they're honest Americans, but they've been totally duped and brainwashed by a system of misinformation that is so skillfully portrayed that these people have been, as I said, for 50 years, been dragged down the road of accepting what they see, and that these, that the so-called leaders of this country have their best interest in mind. So, once again, back to the portal to the dark world. To see a person who is 50 years old, who has honest, goes to church every Sunday, works as hard as anybody can work, is a family person, is teaching his kids the best standards that he can, and for the first time walks through that portal and sees a world that is evil, corrupt, deceptive, lying, presenting people as altar boy leaders when in fact they are some of the most corrupt people that ever walked the face of the earth. To see that person react the first time they ever see and hear this information is very interesting. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the times coming up here. People are starting to wake up. But I just want to reiterate that be somewhat patient with these people out there who are seeing this for the first time, because it's a shock. It's a shock to their system, to their psyche, and they're not going to understand the first time. Their first reaction is going to be one of anger towards anybody who breaks their little bubble of security, of the things that they held near and dear, and all of a sudden they're finding out that those are some of the most evil, corrupt people, as I said, that ever walked the face of this planet. On to the topic of the night, the science topic, when galaxies collide. And I think this is an extremely timely topic because there's so much hype about alignments with our galactic nucleus in the year 2012. And by the way, I just want to reiterate that if you've heard any hype about 2012, it is total garbage. There is no indication, there is no implication in the Mayan calendar that December 21st, 2012 has anything to do with the end of the world. Certainly was not predicted. As I say, the Mayan calendar and the Mayans in general were very superstitious. They had celebrations and timetables throughout their calendar, and they had many calendars, not just one. So they had many dates that were viewed as potential disaster dates. They were extremely superstitious. So to make this perfectly clear, there's no prediction in the Mayan calendar that the year 2012 would be any kind of a disaster date. But there is also talk about some kind of an alignment with the galactic nucleus in a couple regions of the zodiacal, the zodiac, the pantheon of 12 constellations that span our sky. Anyway, that was just a little aside, because I always have to throw that in because there is so much misinformation out there trying to drag people astray and divert their attention from reality. The topic, what if two galaxies collided? Now, most people know what a galaxy looks like. It's a spiral system where billions of stars are in these beautifully symmetric arms of a galaxy. And if you have never seen a galaxy in a picture, you can go on the internet, just do a Google search on galaxy pictures, and I'm sure there'll be Hubble pictures and other astronomical telescope websites, etc., where you can see many galaxies. But what I want you to look at, if you do look at these, is the symmetry, the amazing symmetry in the galactic arms, the beautiful symmetry. But the point I want to talk about tonight is we know that, in fact, our galaxy has no galaxy near enough where we would collide with another galaxy in any remote period of time relative to human existence. But we do see in outer space galaxies which are approaching and, in fact, moving through one another, colliding, as one might use the term. But when we talk about a collision we usually think of as automobiles colliding or billiard balls on a billiard table colliding, which means that things are hitting each other. And so when you hear the term galaxies colliding, one would imagine that as these galaxies move towards each other through the vastness of outer space, that there would be billions of stars colliding and all kinds of disaster occurring. And simply the reality is, and of course this has been known for a long time in the astronomical world, although I find it rather comical that this is not portrayed many times in the popular press. But when galaxies collide, there is a simple statistical analysis one can do. And the reality is that when two galaxies pass completely through each other's regions of space, the probability is there would not be one single stellar collision. That is where two stars would collide directly. And so let me use an example. When I used to teach astronomy, one day, usually towards the end of the class, after the students had a good grasp of the sky and the night sky and the planets and where the stars were, etc., I gave a lecture on the distance, the vast distances in outer space. And in the typical classroom I was in, I had a 90-foot blackboard. It was 90 feet from one side of the blackboard to the other in the lecture hall. And at one end of that 90-foot span, I would draw a 1-inch circle, 1 inch in diameter, at the left side of the blackboard. And I'd say, on a scale that I'm going to draw the solar system, the sun is 1 inch high, a 1 inch in diameter. It would be a ball 1 inch in diameter. And when I get all done with this, 90 feet away on the far right side of the blackboard, will be the planet Pluto. And of course, at that time, Pluto was a planet. But at any rate, then I would go out and I would draw Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, what we call the terrestrial planets. And they would be out just a short distance, a couple short feet from this ball we call the sun, the 1-inch ball. All of this being drawn to proportion. And then I would go out a number of feet farther and I would draw a dot on the board, or a small circle, 1/10 of an inch in diameter, and that would be Jupiter. in other words, Jupiter is one-tenth the diameter of our sun, the main star of our solar system. So now this is what we would call the inner solar system, basically from Jupiter on into the sun. And then the students would start to realize that the Earth on this scale was just a speck of chalk dust on the door, on the blackboard. By the way, that's when teachers used chalk on blackboards. So it gives you a little perspective on when this may have been. Then you go out to Saturn, go a number of feet farther, and Saturn would be about a third the size of Jupiter in terms of its dimensions in this proportional drawing. And so the students could see Saturn, they could see Jupiter, and they knew I had placed a speck of dust where Earth was, a speck of dust where Venus was, and a speck of dust where Mercury was, the closest planet to the sun. And then I would go out, and to get to Uranus and Neptune, the next two planets out, I would be moving across much of the blackboard. And by this time, the students were very intrigued because they began to realize how empty outer space truly is. And then I'd walk to the far end of the 90-foot blackboard, and I'd put just a microscopic grain of dust out there indicating the location of Pluto in the solar system. And now when you look at this blackboard, now imagine three-dimensional space all around this region, empty, 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 except for thousands of very small asteroids and minor planets. And of course, now we have as many as 50 minor planets floating around, particularly in the outer solar system. Excuse me. Some inside the orbit of Pluto, some outside the orbit of Pluto. So all in all, today, if you count the 40 large moons of the solar system and the approximately 40 or 50 Kuiper objects and small planetary objects like Xena and Sedna, etc., we would have approximately a little over 100 actual planetary-type objects in the solar system. And, of course, I've said before, Jupiter is not a planet in my categorization. Jupiter is a small star, as is Saturn, because they have ongoing fusion. And their moons, the four Galilean moons of Jupiter and the one large moon of Saturn and the other large moons of the solar system, I would consider as planets. In fact, I would consider our own moon as a planet, and we would live in a binary planet system, a dual planet system. Earth and our moon would be a dual planet or binary planet system. But at any rate, back to my drawing on the blackboard. Now, I've drawn this, imagine a blackboard 90 feet long, the sun is over at the left side, 1 inch in diameter, Pluto is a speck of dust over at the farthest right-hand side of the blackboard, 90 feet away from the sun. And then I turn around and I'd say, now, does anybody know where the next star would be in our galaxy? Because I wanted to impress on them the emptiness of intergalactic or interstellar space in the galaxy. That's the space between stars in our galaxy. And students would try and calculate, and they had enough data at that point in the class to make the calculation. And the actual correct answer is our nearest stellar neighbor at some 4 light-years away would be, on this scale, about 700 miles from Earth. And so this would impress upon the students that our 1-inch sun on this scale that I've drawn, the nearest star in interstellar space in the galaxy, the nearest star on this scale would be 700 miles away, 1 inch in diameter. That's a lot of empty space. So back to the point that if two galaxies were to approach each other and move through their similar regions of outer space, in other words, collide, the point is that statistically, probably not a single pair of stars from one galaxy or the other, not a single collision would occur. That's how empty outer space is. So, why is this important? Because we deal with very long time scales in astronomy. We deal with very large distance scales. And the distance between galaxies is extremely large also. So the possibility or the probability that two galaxies would collide is extremely remote. We certainly don't have any galaxies near our own that would be threatening to collide with us within any period of time we could even fathom as human beings. We do have a near neighbor. We call it the Andromeda Galaxy, and it's visible to the naked eye on a dark night. You can go out and look up into the northern sky, use a sky chart, and you would be able to identify and see the Andromeda Galaxy. It's about the size of the full moon. That's our nearest galactic neighbor. And we certainly are nowhere near colliding with it, but it's a partner to our Milky Way galaxy. But once again, the whole idea here is that space is very big, it's very empty, and so the probability that an object would come in and somehow hit Earth is very remote, or that it would do damage to the inner solar system is very remote. However, on the flip side, there's a lot of objects moving around out there, and there is clear evidence that throughout history, man has seen large objects come into the solar system, do extensive damage, not only to Earth, but to the other planets, and leave again, only to come back someday in the future. When I talk about extra solar system objects, I talk about objects that, in fact, are out there. We possibly don't know how many there are. In fact, there may be tens, hundreds, or even thousands of such objects that have come into our solar system and then left. Some of them might be on a few thousand year orbit. Some of them might be on a 10,000 year orbit. Some of them might be on a 100,000 year orbit. Some might be on a million year orbit. And some might be on a 100 million year orbit around our sun. Some of them may come through our solar system once and leave and never come back and move on to interstellar space. We do not have sufficient data, especially because we've only been astronomically astute for a couple hundred years and we've only had good telescopes for about maybe 50 years, and we've only had automated search telescopes and optics and cameras for maybe 10 years, where we could actually go out and take a large portion of the sky and repeatedly take pictures of it. And if you ask any astronomer, it would be another decade at least until we have really, truly good search, automated search telescopic equipment to look for objects like the so-called Planet X or its brothers and sisters, the other extra solar system objects that I know are out there floating around that astronomers deny that are out there, even though they're finding more and more of them, but they continue to deny and hold on to this totally incorrect concept that the solar system was created at one time and nothing new is coming in. And I just want to reiterate that this entire issue of Pluto being demoted as a planet and the edict that there are only 8 planets and then there never will be any more than 8 planets is a very subtle way of telling you that if something comes into the solar system that's big, they're not going to call it a planet. I'm not sure what they're going to call it, but when people look up and see that object moving through the solar system, and it will happen someday, and I do not put dates on that. I would put a date on it if I saw one and had sound scientific evidence, but sooner or later, a large extrasolar system object will come into this solar system, and eventually one will come into the inner solar system and it have a potential damaging effect on our planet Earth. Now, I do get a kick out of astronomers. I saw an article this past week where it was suggested that we find a star someplace that has another planet on it, and maybe we should all move there after we destroy Earth. I got news for you, folks. We better take care of the planet we're living on, because the possibility of moving someplace where we're all going to be compatible out there is very remote to nothing. Our ability to get to the moon is nil. So how on Earth are we ever going to get to another solar system, star system, inhabit another planet that's probably totally foreign to ours, with totally different ecology, etc.? The possibility of that is so bizarre, I can't believe that scientists would actually bring that topic up and make it sound like it was plausible. We better take care of the planet we're living on, because there isn't another one for a very long distance in outer space. I just want to close this show with a short summary of solar weather and Earth weather over the past week. Of course, Hurricane Florence was a short-lived storm that went through the Bahamas, and from what I understand, minimal damage. The people in the Bahamas, of course, very prepared for hurricane activity, and it's very interesting to note that Florence did not gain hurricane status until it had moved up out of the tropical regions and up towards the Bahamas, where it should have been dying off in energy. Also, there have been a couple other minor tropical depressions, none of which have formed storms, at least at this time. So, interesting but non-eventful hurricane season continues. Regarding the solar activity this week, once again, the sun being very calm and quiet, the calm kitten possibly before the storm, or could we in fact head into a period of time where the sun actually reduces energy output and we could have possibly a mini ice age as we did in the Middle Ages? The predictions, as I said before in a previous show, it's comical to listen to either talk show hosts or other people attempting to gain hype, trying to say that the next solar cycle will be bigger than the last. But listen to my show last week as I discuss the fact that that simply is not plausible. Once again, this is Jim McCanny. I am out of time. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.